a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate Judiciary Committee is now in order. I'd ask if anyone who wishes to testify this morning, make sure you're signed in on the podium in the back of the room. Please turn off your communication devices. I remembered to do that myself, luckily. On a docket today, we have Senate Bill 114 and Senate Bill 206. First, I will have a roll call. Members present. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Valley, Monroe,
here.
Kirkaby,
here.
Hunhoff,
here.
Bradford,
here.
Bigalka,
here.
Thiessen,
here.
Six present.
Quorum is present. Thank you. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Moved by Kirkaby, second by Monroe. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Welcome you all to the Senate Judiciary Committee on the Internet and here in person at the Capitol. And Mr. Page, why don't you introduce yourself at the microphone, please? Any microphone. Go ahead. Your name, where you're from, etc.
Hi, I'm Nolan Welker. I'm from Hamel, and I guess you usually ask where I'm going, so I'll say I'm going into pre-law at either University of South Dakota or Oklahoma State University.
Wonderful. Where do you go to school?
I go to school in Cologne.
Cologne. Okay, very good. Thank you. We could use some more lawyers in the Senate. Thanks. All right, we will open testimony on Senate Bill 114, which will provide a definition of smoking. Proponents. Senator Thiessen. Are these handouts for this bill?
They are.
Committee should have a couple handouts. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Thiessen, District 34 from Rapid City. Those of you that have been around a while are probably tired of debating the issue of smoking, and we probably thought we all put that to rest a few years ago. Unfortunately, that's not exactly the case, because then along came hookah. And so today we're going to give you some information about hookah and hopefully convince you that hookah is in fact smoking and should be included in the definition of smoking. If you look at Senate Bill 14, it's actually pretty simple. What we're doing is adding a fourth section which defines smoking. Again, it would maybe appear to be obvious, but obvious that's not written in the law. It's not very effective sometimes. Section 4 would be added, which says smoking or smoke, inhaling, exhaling, or tasting the fumes released through burning or heating tobacco. A key element of that will be heating tobacco. You'll hear more about that. I have distributed to you, first of all, a sheet that gives you some of the current statutes regarding smoking, if you wish to review those. And then secondly, a handout entitled Hookahs from some of the Center of Disease Control that provides a little bit more information about hookah, and I think the chief will provide you a visual demonstration of what hookah is all about. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll leave it to the other proponent's testimony to provide background information on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thiessen. Any other proponents for Senate Bill 114? Any other proponents? Uh-oh. He's got a visual. Good.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name's Steve Allender. I'm the police chief in Rapid City. And I'm here to talk to you this morning in the interest of public safety about Senate Bill 114. The smoking laws, Senator Thiessen stated, is lacking a definition of the term smoking. The problem is this definition that's lacking, or the vagueness of the statute, coupled with the method by which tobacco is consumed in a hookah pipe, which I'll show you in a minute, leaves some room for or invites interpretation by hookah consumers and businesses as to what constitutes smoking. I'll explain how hookah, which is a tobacco product that is usually mixed with molasses or some kind of syrupy substance and flavored differently and so on, but it's tobacco, how that's consumed in the hookah pipe. This is a typical hookah pipe, which we purchased at the hookah shop in Rapid City. Has a base that is filled partway with water. Then it has a bowl on top that where the tobacco product goes. And then there's a thin perforated piece of tin foil that goes over the top of the wet tobacco. And then a lit coal goes on top of the tin foil. Then the user inhales on the hose, which causes the heat and the fumes from the tobacco to be drawn down in through the water and then into the hose and into your lungs. So the user inhales the smoke into your lungs and then exhales it back out into the room wherever they are at that time. So the users and sellers of this hookah pipe claim that the process does not produce smoke, but rather produces water vapor that looks like smoke. Therefore, the process does not constitute smoking. Furthermore, the tobacco isn't actually lit, so there seems to be a disbelief that South Dakota smoking laws apply to them. So whether the process of smoking burns the tobacco or just superheats it, the argument really appears to be, is it producing smoke or is it producing water vapor? I have some photographs here to hand to the committee to let you see, to let you make your own opinion about that. And I'm guessing when you see the photos, you'll get to see white clouds of smoke, as I do when I see the photos. So the real issue, in my opinion, the real issue in need of solving with this bill is to create clarity in the statute. Clarity will bring about an equal playing field between other tobacco establishments and hookah businesses. It will bring about an equal playing field between other alcohol establishments, which are banned from allowing smoking, and hookah businesses. Many other states have smoking definitions that clearly include the burning or heating of various plants or substances, etc., in order to include things such as hookah. Clarity in South Dakota smoking law will affirm what we already believe to be true, that burning or heating tobacco to the point of producing smoke, even if the tobacco is not actually on fire, is smoking. We believe this improved definition will close the perceived loophole and protect those who want to drink from secondhand smoke, and will protect those who want to smoke, especially the 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, from the bar scene. The 2010 smoking laws were good, but they would have been great had they contained a realistic definition of the term of smoking, and that's all this bill asks for, in my opinion. So I'm here in support of this bill. I'm asking you to approve the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Does the committee have any questions for Mr. Allender?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Kirkby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question for Chief Allender. In Rapid City, and I guess, and I like your testimony that it was water vapor being exhaled, but has there not been some pretty substantial history with neighboring properties of these establishments that have, in fact, diplomatically raised a little cane about the noxious smoke and or odors coming from these type of establishments.
That's true. There, whenever a hookah establishment, in our experience, has been in a multi-tenant building, or in one case, in a downtown storefront building attached to other buildings, the neighboring businesses complain of the odor of smoke that is very, very strong and flavored differently. One restaurant is on the side of a hookah establishment and believes that their business may be in jeopardy because of it. Several tenants have left another building just based on it. So there's a lot of smoke.
Any other questions? Senator Hunhoff.
Thank you. What has prompted this generous interest in Rapid City on this topic?
Prompted our interest?
Yes.
It's just been a progression of trying to get the hookah businesses in compliance. We had a hiccup in the application of the law early on when the smoking ban was enacted. The state's attorney at that time believed the story that it was not smoking because he was told that there were perhaps was not tobacco being used. And sometime later, after we had a number of issues at the hookah businesses related to complaints and underage consumption of alcohol and so on, and the sale of synthetic drugs and a number of things, then we took kind of a holistic look at the issue again and found that the weak link here, the thing that should have been corrected initially, was the interpretation of the smoking law. And now I believe the definition of smoking will solve that puzzle.
Any other questions of the committee? If not, I've got a question. In our handout, we see there is an exemption for smoking in retail stores in a store that sells primarily tobacco products. So if this hookah pipe was used in a tobacco store and lit, that would be okay. But if it was used in a bar where alcohol was sold, it would not be okay. Is that, I mean, that's your intention of the bill?
That's correct, to apply the smoking law to have them be one or the other. They were first a tobacco store where they had nothing but hookah products, and then they applied for and received an alcohol license, then that's when the real evidence was coming forward that this was a mistake. So this will define it. I'm hoping this will define it in their minds, if nothing else. We already believe this is true, that they should not be allowed to have alcohol if they choose to have tobacco. So we've asked them to choose one or the other.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Any other proponents? Any other proponents for Senate Bill 114?
Good morning. My name is Joel Landine. I'm the city attorney in Rapid City, and I'd like to thank the committee for letting me testify here this morning. From a legal perspective, and it's already been touched on, I think the important thing to note is that when the legislature adopted the smoking prohibition in public places and places of employment, it allowed for one exception. And the exception to that was a retail tobacco shop, and it had requirements to be a retail tobacco shop. And one of the requirements was specifically in the statute that they not be allowed to serve alcoholic beverages. And it doesn't even say receive a license. It just says you are not allowed to consume alcoholic beverages on the premises of a licensed or of a retail tobacco shop. And that's what this definition is really aimed at doing, is prohibiting a business from essentially selling tobacco products and being a licensed or allowing the consumption of alcohol on the premises. And as Chief Allender touched on, one of the concerns we have with that business model is that you only need to be 18 to smoke tobacco or consume tobacco products. And you must be 21, obviously, to consume alcohol. So with this business model, they are trying to bring in as many people as they can. So you have a situation where you have a lot of 18 to people in their early 20s mixing together. Alcohol is being served. Chief Allender handed out some pictures of from the Facebook page of one of the establishment in Rapid City that had both alcohol and hookah. If you were to go and look at their Facebook page, you would see many pictures of parties and things they had where the establishment is very crowded. And just being able to have 18-year-olds present in a licensed alcohol establishment in that situation is just rife for causing problems with the enforcement of the alcohol laws. And that is something that is obviously of great concern to the city. State law, what it says is that if you're under 21, that you cannot loiter on the premises of a licensed alcohol establishment. Then the question becomes, well, what is loitering? And there's an attorney general opinion that says if you're on the premises of the licensed establishment and you're engaging in an activity that's legally occurring on that premises, you're not loitering. So the argument would be if it's a hookah lounge and you are there smoking hookah and you're 18, you are not loitering on the licensed premises because you are participating in what that business is for. So if you allow a retail tobacco shop to also serve alcohol, which was specifically prohibited, it's going to create this problem. And while right now Rapid City is on the front edge of that, other communities may face that in the future. And as Chief Allender said, there wasn't a definition provided of smoking. And I can only assume that was because everybody felt that it was pretty clear what smoking was and there was no need for a definition. But unfortunately, when lawyers get involved, things that you thought were clear sometimes aren't always as clear as you thought. So we would appreciate any help in getting a definition to make clear that if you are selling or your business is the selling of tobacco products, you can do that and you can take advantage of the exception, but you can't serve alcoholic beverages. So unless there's any questions.
Thank you, sir. Any questions of this witness? Senator Hunhoff.
Thank you. I'm curious, and I don't know if you were the city attorney, when application was made for license to have the alcohol on that site, did you have this same discussion regarding the youth that would be there?
You know, it's been several years. I vaguely recall there was some discussion of it. Traditionally, the businesses somewhat police themselves because if you have a full-service alcohol license that's worth several hundred thousand dollars, it's not worth the risk to have underage people on the premises and potentially lose your license. But the beer and wine licenses are about $500, and it's apparently worth the risk, and it's something I think that we would look at much, much differently in the future. I do recall expressing concern that I was not the city attorney at the time, but expressing concern about the fact that if you have underage or if you have people under 21 and you're serving alcohol, that that is just a recipe for disaster and that you need to, and or that frankly it would likely lead to problems in the future with the license. But again, as Chief Allender said, where this really started was when they were opening the business, they said, well, we don't think this is smoking. And they, at the time, claimed that all that was produced was water vapor. And we, you can see from the pictures, and we've actually, it wasn't a scientific test, but we did a field test with some equipment the fire department had and compared it to cigarette smoke or cigar smoke and spit out the same results. So I think it's pretty clear it's smoking, but the state's attorney, and he didn't exactly say, I agree it's not smoking. What he said is that while he didn't necessarily agree with what their attorney was asserting at the time, that he was going to construe it narrowly, and that unless some things changed in the future, he was not planning on prosecuting them or pursuing it, but that he did leave it open that if he received further evidence or further guidance from either the legislature or the state, he would reconsider that. And based on everything that was going on, he took a look at it again and let them know, I have changed my mind that I think this is smoking, I think this is a violation, and I'm going to proceed against it, which is basically how we got here today.
Just one follow-up, and it's really relevant. The liquor license they have, they just have a beer and wine? Is that what you're saying? Or do they have a
full license? Right. They just got, they do not have a full license.
Okay.
They just had a beer and wine license.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions? Okay, thank you, sir. Anyone else, proponent? Paige can do that for you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me. My name is Dr. Kevin Weiland. I'm an internist in Rapid City, South Dakota, and I was asked to come here today to testify on this hookah bill. I am an internal medicine, so I'm a doctor for adults. And, you know, this is sort of something that kind of came up in my practice just recently within the last 6 months or so since these hookah lounges started to evolve in our little community. If we don't address it today, it's going to evolve in our state. It's already evolving in a lot of other states, and I think that they have circumvented this smoke-free law that protected so many people by opposing the law and able to, and calling this a not a tobacco product or a smoking product. July of this year, of last year, a young man came in after he was in the hospital, after he attended one of the hookah lounges and got really sick. This was something that just struck me quite wildly because he passed out, EMS was activated, he was transferred to the emergency room, he had an extensive workup because he was a young man, he passed out, he had a cardiac workup, he had his CAT scan of his head, and this is thousands of dollars worth of workup. Is mandated that they follow up with the primary care doctor, and that's where I came in, and I was assigned to him, and I did see him, and I interviewed him. I had no idea what was going on. This is just blindsided a lot of us in our community, what they can do in these places. Just to go back to how drugs are administered into the body, how they get into the body. I prescribe topical medications such as hormones, such as Duragesic patches for pain. It can go through the skin. We use rectal suppositories for like Compazine for nausea. Some couple in Florida is using coffee enemas to get high from caffeine that way. There's many ways to deliver medication, not just orally. This delivery system is probably the most effective delivery system next to a cigarette. The lungs are that little capillary bed in the lungs where the blood exchanges with oxygen and carbon dioxide is exchanged is a powerful delivery system for nicotine, and nicotine is the drug, is what they're getting out of this. But you can also do these synthetic drugs like bath salts, these synthetic things that are mimicking the scheduled one drugs like LSD in these things, and they're doing this in these things. I don't know if they're doing it in the hookah lounges, and I'm not sure if my patient that I saw actually had that happen to him, but certainly that is a possibility that you can actually aerosol and get this into a vapor of smoke and inhale it into the lungs like nicotine and all the other carcinogens. We know there's 6,000 carcinogens in smoke and in secondhand smoke, 60 known carcinogens, and all these things that can come in. And when these people are in the hookah lounge, they don't just take a puff. They sit there for 1 hour. And the amount of tobacco that they can consume in 1 hour is phenomenal, 100 times more than just having a lit cigarette in that 1 hour. And that's significant. They can, depending on how much they want to take in and how much lung volume they have, and all those capillary beds are being exposed to all those carcinogens and all that nicotine going to the brain within 5 minutes and causing that high. And that's what they're getting. That's why they're doing it. It is a health hazard. I see it in the immediate effect in what happened to this young man. But down the road, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, these children are going to have lung disease, emphysema, they're going to have bladder cancer, they're going to have esophageal cancer. They're at risk for all of these sort of things if we don't put a stop to this today. I think this is a significant health issue, and that's where I come in, and that's what I've been asked to do. We passed a smoke-free law back In 2001, Senate Bill 118, I was in here testifying on the effects of secondhand smoke at that time. It wasn't comprehensive enough. Restaurants like Perkins and other chain restaurants wanted smokers in their restaurants, and they circumvented the law and said, hey, if we serve alcohol, we can have our patrons smoke. And we thought that was crazy. We went to the state again, the American Cancer Society, Tobacco Free Kids Network, American Lung and Heart Associations, the American Medical Association, all organizations that I believe in that I've been a part of, came here to testify again on the effects of secondhand smoke. I actually went to Deadwood with a similar machine, like the captain said, or like the lawyer said, that we had sampling air quality in Deadwood casinos, and I was really remarked at what we found, and I submitted an abstract article to the committees and described what we found. We banned smoking at that time in all public places. There was some, a little bit of the if this is your product and you 64% is sold in your store, then you can certainly, you know, smoke it, but you can't have alcohol. That was what we thought, and it went to the ballot initiative. Because it was circumvented again, it went to the ballot initiative, and we won overwhelmingly by 65% in 2010. And since that time, we have had a 14% decrease in hospitalizations because of the secondhand smoke. And we've saved over $5.5 million, according to the recent study. So I would support this bill, and I think we need to close the loophole, because I can see a healthcare hazard, not just in our community, but in Sioux Falls and in Pierre and in Yankton and in other parts of our state. It's happening in other parts of the country. It's happening here. We just have to stop it where it's in its tracks. And I take any questions.
Any questions from anyone? If not, I've got one.
Yes.
Aside from the fact that the nicotine, other carcinogens in the smoke, you know, we had that pipe up here. I was wondering, well, if this mouthpiece is being passed from person to person, what about the...
Exposure to infectious diseases? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have a... You know, even TB can be exposed that way. Obviously, influenza, any of the viruses, infectious mono can be spread that way. Cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr virus. I mean, it's just a slew of infectious disease things. Not to mention the reemergence of tuberculosis, which is happening, and this is a drug-resistant bug that's happening as well.
I suspect these individuals aren't taking the time to disinfect this mouthpiece in between.
I don't think I'd put my lips on alcohol. Swabbed device, I think it would taste kind of bad.
Yeah. Might not taste
that's
any
a good
worse
question,
than the
though,
rest
thanks.
Of it, but that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Any other proponents?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jeremy Pankratz with the Attorney General's Office. This is essentially a we support this for health and public safety reasons. If anyone does have any questions of me, I'm happy to answer those now.
Any questions? Senator Bradford.
It made something about a statement that tobacco is never lighted, or I don't know. Anyway, I'm wondering about the actual tobacco. Is it purchased? Is all of our tobacco taxes paid on that tobacco that is used in the process?
Mr. Chairman? It is my understanding that any of the tobacco that would be purchased to be used in the machine, and I'm not positive as I haven't been out to these locations myself, but if it's purchased as either RYO or pipe tobacco, that it would be subject to the RYO or pipe tobacco taxes.
Senator Hunhoff?
So if it's taxed as a tobacco product, then it is a tobacco product.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
So
I think the issue that they're running into is the definition of the actual consumption of the tobacco, whether or not it's lit on fire and smoked, or if it's being consumed through the heating and water vapor action. But there's no question that what is being sold and used, for the most part, if someone puts other substances in it that isn't tobacco, that's their deal. But the tobacco that's actually being consumed is an actual tobacco product as taxed.
And there's not been litigation on this from any of these hookah organizations. If you're being taxed as a tobacco product, but yet you're saying it's not a tobacco product that's smoked, why am I paying a tax on this?
There hasn't been any, Mr. Chairman, there hasn't been any statewide tax issues brought up by them. There may or may not be some local level lawsuits, but there hasn't been anything against the Department of Revenue.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Any other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Police Chiefs Association. And the chiefs from around the state have looked west, and they see that this loophole is causing problems that they would just as soon did not spread to their own communities. And so the chiefs support plugging this loophole with this definition of smoking and would urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Justin Bell. I'm an attorney from Pierre, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota State Medical Association. We would support this legislation. I am personally, in my day job, one of those topsy-turvy lawyers that try to argue about stuff like this that was previously stated. I think that this bill brings clarity to any confusion that there would be about smoking in the current law. I would note, and I did some research on this specifically relating to this issue, the Centers for Disease Control, just if you look at what they have regarding hookah smoking, explicitly states, for example, that hookahs are used to smoke specially made tobacco that is available in a variety of flavors. It also goes on to state that water pipe smoking delivers the addictive drug nicotine in at least as toxic a situation as cigarette smoke, that the typical one-hour-long hookah smoking session involves inhaling 100 to 200 times the volume of smoke inhaled from a single cigarette, that the charcoal used to heat the tobacco in a hookah actually increases health risks by producing high levels of carbon monoxide, metals, and cancer-causing chemicals. Even after it has passed through water, that smoke contains high levels of toxic compounds. And maybe most importantly, when it comes to the situation that we hear today, for secondhand smoke from hookahs pose serious health risks for non-smokers, particularly because it contains smoke not only from tobacco, but also from the heat source, specifically the charcoal used in the hookah. This is an issue that has serious health hazards to the state and the people that are in these places. South Dakota State Medical Association believes that this is a good piece of legislation that just helps bring clarity to any issues that there may be regarding the definition of smoking, and I will stand by for questions. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Bell? Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further proponents? Any further problems? Mr. Mayor, I believe. Go ahead.
Senator, my name is Sam Quaker, Mayor of Rapid City, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of you this morning. I wanted to start off by saying that I recognize that we've just had three top officials from Rapid City testify, and this bill is all sponsored by Black Hills legislators, but I want to make it very clear that this is not just a Black Hills issue. This will soon be an issue, I think, in every college town in the state and then every other city as well. The real question in front of you is it smoke? And the argument that's being made by the hookah establishments is that it's simply water vapor and it's not smoke. And I that's an incredulous argument that just simply doesn't pass the smell test. And speaking of smell, I was asked to, or I went on a ride along with our police department about a year ago and walked into one of these establishments in Rapid City, and I came out smelling like a cranberry. And this stuff is not water vapor. It is definitely smoke. And it's also, this legislation is also a fairness issue. If it's not legal in South Dakota to sit in a bar and smoke one cigarette, then how can you sit in a bar and smoke 100 cigarettes in one sitting? What we have now is equivalent to the situation of air traffic control grounding all the planes due to certain weather conditions, and yet allowing the spruce goose to fly unrestricted because the owners are calling it a bird. So I ask for your support of this legislation. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, sir. Any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Megan Myers, and I'm the registered lobbyist for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network in South Dakota. We're the nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. I come before you today to support Senate Bill 114. I won't go over all the information that's already been given, but we believe this bill has the potential to strengthen our current law. And I will just add that our thousands of grassroots volunteers across South Dakota would strongly oppose any attempt to weaken our law, which we know is working to improve the health of all South Dakotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I'll stand by to provide any background or additional questions.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else wish to speak as a proponent for Senate Bill 114? Any other proponents? Okay, we'll open it up to opponents. Opponents, Senate Bill 114. No one? Okay. Mr. Teason, would you like a short? No?
I'll pass. Thank you, sir.
Do we have any further questions of any proponent? Any further questions? Okay, we'll open it up to discussion or action among the committee.
Chairman.
Mr. Monroe.
I move to pass.
Thank you. Second. Motion by Monroe to do pass, seconded by Senator Hunhoff. Any comments or discussion on that motion? No? I guess I would like to make a point. To me, it seems obvious as I look at that machine, and if these guys are spending an hour sitting there sucking on this pipe, it's not just water vapor, or they wouldn't be doing it. You know, it's obvious they're getting some kind of high or satisfaction or enjoyment out of this. So, you know, if that coal on top is hot and it's causing the tobacco, which is obviously tobacco, to be transformed and consumed, it's obvious that I believe we have a problem. So, any further comments? If not, I'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senators Valley, Monroe.
Aye.
Kirkaby.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Vigalka.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Six ayes.
Motion carries.
6-0.
Motion carries 6-0.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Move consent.
There is a motion for consent.
I'll second it.
And there is a second. Motion by Kirkaby, seconded by Hunhoff. Any comments? If not...
I will vote no, so...
Okay. We'll not put it on consent. We'll let Senator Teason explain this on the floor or someone else. Thank you. Thank you all for coming, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Forgot to mention that earlier. See, a lot of us are wearing red today. And Senator Teason has a particularly appropriate tie. And once again, I'll remind you, if you are going to testify or have testified, make sure you sign in. You are required to do so. And we will move on to the second bill today, Senate Bill 206. Once again, we have Senator Craig Teason from Rapid City. Welcome again, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you said, Craig Teason, District 34, Rapid City.
Well, the second bill I bring you today hopefully will be just as obvious as the first one was. It's clarifying an issue that goes back to my law enforcement days, and I'm glad to see that finally we've gotten around to clarify this. And I'll explain it by giving you an example. We have a hostage situation in Phillip, South Dakota. And the small Phillip Police Department and the small Haakon County Sheriff's Department realize that they need some additional help. So they call to Rapid City and ask them to send their SWAT team to Phillip to help resolve this situation. And so immediately, as all agencies do in Rapid City, we gather as quickly as we can and hightail it to Phillip to help them resolve the situation. There's three issues that are addressed in this bill today that previously were not entirely resolved. And those three issues are, what jurisdiction do Rapid City or Pennington County Police law enforcement officers have when they arrive in Phillip? Do they have arrest powers and other police powers that they have in their own jurisdiction? And secondly, who's responsible for worker comp if one of those officers is somehow injured during the operation? And thirdly, who's responsible for liability of those officers as they report to another jurisdiction? Now, previous to this bill, agencies that routinely work together have what they call mutual aid agreements. So, for example, Rapid City Police Department regularly is at least prepared to respond to Sturgis, at least during the Sturgis motorcycle rally. And so they execute an agreement between the Rapid City Police Department or the Pennington County Sheriff's Office and Sturgis, South Dakota, or Meade County. And so they have an agreement in place. The problem is you can imagine how many interjurisdictional agreements would be required, and who knows? I mean, I know that the SWAT team from Rapid City has responded, I think, to Lemon, to an incident. They can go, you know, the resources that a big city like Rapid City has are not available many places around the state, and so they can be called to go many directions. And so what Senate Bill 206 does is attempts to resolve that, and I think, and we'll find out in the testimony, but I think that we've touched base with all the entities and all the insurance companies and all the people that have sort of skin in the game on who's responsible when these things occur. So let me just walk you through it real quickly and point out the parts that are specific. On the first page, it talks about the National Incident Management System. And what the first thing that we realized is that law enforcement is different from other public safety responders, for example, fire departments. Fire departments, which are covered in different chapters, already have agreements in place because, when the Black Hills are on fire, the fire truck from Brandon goes across the state to help. And they have agreements in place to pay for that and to utilize federal funding and all those sorts of things. So we're carving out all other emergency response agencies, fire departments, ambulance services, emergency management are not affected by this bill. This is specifically a law enforcement bill, and this specifies that. On the second page, is the section that talks about authority, and it simply says that any law enforcement officer has the same authority to act as any other law enforcement officer of the requesting agency. So if the SWAT team goes to Phillip, they have law enforcement authority just like the Haakon County Sheriff's Office that called them. So it's kind of like automatically being deputized when they make that call and we respond, they become an officer in the agency we're responding to. Further down on page 2, it talks about worker comp. We studied this issue and determined that worker comp, just by necessity of insurance regulations, worker comp applies to the person. And so worker comp will continue to be the responsibility of the deploying agency. So in my example, Rapid City will understand because of this statute, they will understand that they continue to have the worker comp responsibility when they agree to help another agency. If we move on to page 3, is the section talking about liability. Any liability that accrues on account of the negligent or otherwise tortious acts of law enforcement officer while performing the duty is the responsibility of the requesting agency. So when Rapid City goes to Philip, when they ask and Rapid City responds, when they ask, they know that they are accepting the liability of the actions of those officers when they come to that jurisdiction to help. So that's really the basics of this bill. We do have some law enforcement folks and others here that may testify to it further, but I wanted to lay out what it is that we're trying to really clarify when these actions take place. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Thank you.
My apologies, Senator Teason. Would you just, again, on page 1, what did you say the underlying part is, failure? Would you just briefly again what you said on that?
It says failure to correctly implement the National Incident Management System. That is...
I know what it is.
Okay. This makes sure that what we're doing in this statute doesn't affect our agreement with the National Incident Management System. This was a concern of the state that we might somehow jeopardize any, say, reimbursement, for example, that the feds may have as a result of this. So we put in this sort of affirmative statement to make sure that this, what we're doing here, doesn't affect any of that.
Senator Monroe.
Senator Teason, on page 3, lines 22, 23, 24 of your section 6, it says a deployed agency that provides the assistance and requests reimbursement shall be reimbursed by, and on, line 23 at the end, wages, salary, employee benefits such as disability and pension. Let's say that your SWAT team goes to Philip and not everything goes right, and you get a guy who gets shot in the foot and now he's disabled for a real long time. Whose problem is that? According to this, it says it would be Philip's problem.
I might have to defer to legal authorities, but I think we're talking about a worker comp issue, and worker comp remains the responsibility of the responding agency. And if and if it went to retirement, then it would become a retirement system issue.
Okay. That seems a little confusing to me right there. I can see what you're saying, too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Senator Hanoff.
Thank you. From your experience as chief of police, when you were figuring and you were allocating your officers' time, you not only include in that time their salary, but there's a proration on everybody's salary for benefits for whatever you pay. And is that usually included when you're selling the service or you're allocating it out? It's a lump sum. If your starting salary, I'm saying $10 an hour, but then you have 20% or 25% benefits, so at the end of the day, it's $15 or whatever. Is that what this is referencing in that part?
That's correct. Two things, if I might. First of all, the roll-up for law enforcement is actually in the 30% area because of equipment and uniforms and all those sorts of things. Secondly, I should probably have mentioned this, but this requires the requesting agency to pay if the deploying agency asks for payment. The fact of the matter is that oftentimes in situations like this, the deploying agency doesn't request payment because it's simply a handshake kind of agreement that says, you know, maybe someday you're going to come and help us. And so we work back and forth. But it does make it clear that if the deploying agency asks for payment, that the requesting agency has to pay. Hope I made that clear.
Sounds good. Senator Bradford has a question.
Well, on page 4, it says this section does not apply to any state law enforcement. So, what you're saying, that part you said, would not apply to anybody that was a state officer and sure that. Even the Rapid City Police Department.
Mr.
Chair.
Teason, yeah.
No, actually, the Rapid City police officers are not state law enforcement officers and are not state employees. State law enforcement officers already have jurisdiction statewide. For example, a state trooper can, you know, can live in Buffalo but can go on special duty and make arrests in Sioux Falls because they have statewide jurisdiction. Same with DCI agents and those folks. This applies to municipal and county employees, basically.
Follow-up, Senator Bradford.
Then what Senator Monroe said would be applicable, then the local agency would be, according to this.
We'll maybe get a clarification from someone else on the who pays when someone gets hurt.
All right.
Okay. Any further proponents? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Police Chiefs Association and the South Dakota Municipal League on this bill. And your clarification to the questions that you're looking at is in Section 3, and it's on Line 7. And it talks about any deploying agency or covered entity involved in the incident may request reimbursement. And many times that deploying agency does not want to request reimbursement, but this allows them to request reimbursement. And if so, then the responding agency is required to pay. This bill largely deals with the insurance issues, and it sorts them out. Where does liability lie? Where does workers' comp lie? And the entities that were involved in forming this bill are all in agreement that these are placed in this bill in the appropriate place. And those entities include the organizations that I represent, the police chiefs, public safety, and the state people fund. And so this has all been worked out. We're excited about this bill because we think it may be a model for all of the other responding entities. And so we're hoping to work with fire and ambulance and those types of entities over the summer and come together with something probably for next year that will be modeled on this. But for now, law enforcement was the one that was easiest to work out. Some of our entities are doing up to 40 different mutual aid agreements. If you go on the Municipal League website, you will see that we have a sample mutual aid agreement out there. It echoes the provisions that are in this bill. This simply sets it up so that they don't have to go on that on a case-by-case basis. So they have something in place. Everybody knows what the rules are. Nobody has to request. Nobody has to respond. But if they do, here are the rules, and everybody is pretty good with the way that this all worked out. So we would urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of this witness? Not? Okay. Any other proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sheriff Mike Lightold from here in Hughes County, and I'm here to answer any questions you have on this and to urge your support of it. As you know, in South Dakota, just the nature of the geography and our demographics, we all have to help each other or we can't get the job done. And so this helps in that process. The joint powers, as Yvonne mentioned, is administratively, it's a problem. The joint powers that I have with the counties around me require that I get an oath in office for every new officer they have, so that requires administrative time. This would help eliminate that. It would help us respond. It would help other agencies respond to us. When we had our flood here, we used resources from all over the state, and we had to swear those people in. And some of those issues, had they been hurt, would have been muddied somewhat by this current law. These changes to this law will clarify that and make that a lot easier for us to respond and protect the public that we're sworn to protect. I'd answer any questions.
Any questions of the sheriff? Any questions? Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman Bulgalka. Sorry. Committee members, Stacey Eggert, Executive Director for the South Dakota Sheriff's Association, and I just want to ask for your support. And this has been a discussion we began last spring. We've worked with everybody that we could think of that may be affected or impacted. Questions were asked about statute to the Attorney General's office, if there were issues relating to public safety and how it would affect things. We worked with them and their attorneys, and we worked with the Municipal League and all the insurers, the county commissioners, asked questions, went back, had everybody tell the people that would be affected how it would impact them, get their response. We worked all year through this, and I would stand by for any additional questions you may still have.
Thank you. Any questions? Any other proponents? Any other proponents? Any opponents? Any opponents of Senate Bill 206? Any opponents? If not, Senator Teason, you'd like any follow-up? Not necessary. Okay. Any further questions of any proponent from anyone? If not, I'll open it up to discussion and or action by the committee.
Chairman.
Senator Kirkaby.
Motion do pass.
Second. We have a motion do pass by Senator Kirkaby and a second by Senator Valley. Welcome back, sir. Any comments?
Just quickly, Mr. Chairman, I think that the bill is surprisingly authored very well, and it's serving that purpose, and I would encourage your support.
Okay, I don't know if that's a surprise or not, but maybe to you it is. Further comments?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. Senator Teason.
I should just resist that, but let's clarify that I didn't author the bill. I brought the bill, but I didn't author it. That's why you're... So you shouldn't be so surprised, Senator Kirkby. I do appreciate the various entities that got involved in this, and surprisingly, there were a lot of people to contact, insurers, insurance companies, the various agencies. The state wanted to make sure that they weren't adversely affected in some way, and everybody was cooperative, and I think this will streamline the process and really makes it pretty simple. When somebody goes to ask for help, they know what they're going to incur when they ask for it. And when people are asked to come and help, they know what their responsibilities are and what they can expect in return, as far as reimbursement if they ask for it. So I appreciate the committee hearing the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments? Any further comments? If not, we have the motion do pass, and I'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senators Valley.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Kirkaby.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Bigalka.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Seven ayes.
Motion carries 7-0. Mr. Monroe.
I would move the bill to the consent calendar.
We have a motion for consent. Is there a second?
Sure. Second.
Second by Kirkaby. Any comments?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I think this is such a good bill, and I think he did a great job. And I think it's going to make things a lot easier.
All right. Thank you. All in favor of the consent motion shall say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And we will put Senate Bill 206 on consent. And that concludes our calendar for today. We will be meeting again Tuesday, 8 a.m. Do we have an agenda? Tuesday, February 19th, last day to move required delivery of bills or resolutions to the House of Origin. We're all done with Senate bills. We, as of today, we will have three House bills on Tuesday, which happens to be my birthday. 1096, 1130, and 1163. Any further action?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
I just wanted to remind Senator Valley that we were all supplied with samples of hookah, and because you were not here, I hogged yours. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You may be the only one who knows how to use that thing. So, anyone else? Not, I'll entertain a motion. To adjourn? By Thiessen, second by Valley. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We are adjourned.